Trish Johansson is a New Zealand trained veterinarian who lived in Cambodia for several years, establishing a veterinary care clinic in Siem Reap and working to eradicate rabies, developing a vaccination program called Eradicate Rabies, One Village at a Time. Trish Johansson is back in Queenstown for now, anyway, pending perhaps the end of COVID. She's with me now. Hi, Trish.
Hi, Kim. How are you doing?
I'm good. Do you plan to go back to Cambodia after COVID or what?
Yeah, I will. I've still got my rented house over there, my dog and my cat. The practice, although I'm really happy not to be running the practice because it's not where my focus is now. So, yeah, I'm not really sure where I'll be. Like a lot of us with COVID, it's quite hard to make plans and know what's next. But, yeah, I feel like my time in Cambodia isn't finished.
So your focus, if not the practice, is on eradicating rabies, is it?
Yeah.
And how have you gone about that?
Oh, wow, where to start? Can we start with why rabies?
Yes.
Just to narrow it down for me a bit. I became really passionate about rabies. Of course, I'd heard about it at vet school, but it was, you know, we've never had rabies in New Zealand. And when I went to Cambodia, I was seeing the results, you know, I was seeing rabies infections. And I realized how mainstream it really is still in so many countries. And it's just such a horrendous way to die. It's just horrible. I've got to be a little bit careful what I say on the radio because I'm a surgeon. I tend to be naturally a little bit more gory than most people. So
right.
I have to edit myself.
Well, I mean, what I'm thinking of with rabies is foaming at the mouth, hydrophobia, and death.
Yeah, it can take up to 10 days to die. People have massive fevers, hallucinations, self-harm. I've seen videos where people are trying to, you know, smash through windows and climb out, but they're not really conscious and aware of anything that's happening. Mm. And there will be periods of perfect lucidity. So you've got this madness and pain and, you know, it's just awful. It's just you see people trying to crawl out of their own bodies and then suddenly they're clear and they
know
what's
happening. It's this virus. The virus affects the nerves, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's an amazing virus. It, you know, most viruses end up in the bloodstream where our immune system is. But with the rabies virus, it climbs up the nerves, so it can't be picked up by the nervous system in the same by the immune system in the same way that most bacteria and viruses.
Oh,
are.
I see.
And then it just crawls, you know, bit by bit, all the way up to the brain. So if you get bitten on the fingers or the feet, you've got a lot more time to get post-exposure vaccinations. But if you're bitten on the face, where most children are, because more than 50% of deaths are children, the optic nerve is absolutely huge, and that's just behind the eye. So it's got a real fast track straight to the brain.
How common is it then? How common is rabies, death by rabies in Cambodia?
The World Health Organization has got a figure of 59,000 deaths a year. But whenever you get together with people from UN or World Health Organization or the World Animal Health Organization, they say, oh, we all know that those numbers are way, way underestimated.
Is that in Cambodia alone, that number?
Cambodia, there was some mathematical calculations done in 2007, and they said 800 deaths a year, but unofficial calculations have taken that up to 3,000 or 4,000 deaths a year.
Wow.
And the thing is, it's not even so much deaths. I mean, we're all going to die, you know, one way or another. But it's just the fact that it's such a horrendous disease, and it's absolutely 100% preventable.
The vaccine has been available since when? 1865?
1885. And, Louis Pasteur, he was a brave, brave man. So he had seen loads of people and animals dying of rabies. And yet he collected saliva from living rabid dogs for his to create his vaccine. And he worked alongside two colleagues with a loaded revolver. And the pact was that if any one of them got bitten, then the bravest of the other two would shoot them on the spot. And I just think that's just such phenomenal commitment. And in this day and age, we could, it's absolutely doable that we could spread the word, and we could get rabies eradicated from the planet. And I just think that's amazing. And there's already the food and what is it? Food and Agriculture Administration, the World Health Organization, and the World Animal Health Organization that have all decided to collaborate with the goal of zero dog-mediated rabies cases by 2030.
Has it been
So,
a problem of the distribution of the vaccine or the availability of the vaccine or the willingness of people to use the vaccine?
it's just resources. So people don't even know. Because there isn't the education there. So when you talk to people in a country with rabies, not that I've been to all of them, these are more than 120 countries with rabies, but people don't actually know how it's transmitted. They don't know that the rabies virus is very fragile. So just washing your hands with soap and water really aggressively, that could actually stop the virus from reaching the nerves. But the big thing is a post-exposure vaccination. And these are readily available in most countries, but people don't even know that they exist. And so I guess I got the passion for rabies when I thought, well, this is such an awful disease, but the solution has been there for over a century. And it really is just education. It just feels like a simple answer for a horrible disease.
Education of people who own dogs, but are there not a lot of stray dogs in Cambodia?
Not in Cambodia. There's a lot of street dogs, but if you go to any area and there's a whole lot of dogs on the road, you can point out any of the dogs and say, "Hey, who does this belong to?" And they'll know. So it's not like India where so many dogs are stray, and rabies, Mission Rabies is doing a really big job over in India with capture and vaccination. Whereas what I'm aiming to do in Cambodia is to educate one village at a time. So everybody from the youngest child up to the chief knows about rabies, how to prevent it. And basically, you just vaccinate more than 70% of the village dogs, and that's it. People won't get rabies then. And the other thing is to let people know where to get the post-exposure vaccines and so on. So from that point, we upskill the animal health worker and the human health worker for each village. So then they take responsibility for maintaining the rabies-free status from then on. So I'm a real fan of, giving people the information and the resources, but those communities don't need us doing it for them. All they need is to know where to get the vaccines from, how to store them, how to give them correctly, and just the other logistics of preventing rabies.
It's not only
So that's
dogs that it's not only dogs that can impart rabies, though, is it?
Sorry?
It's not only dogs that can
No.
impart rabies.
No. I was talking to a lady. She's a professor in Thailand, and she has a rabies program, and she said they've had a big problem with cows in Thailand in the past. So any mammal
Cows.
can carry rabies.
Yeah, but cows don't
So
bite you as a rule, do they? Or do rabid cows tend to bite you?
I actually don't know.
It's never
I'm going
occurred to me.
to look that up when I look it up when I get off this call.
I know,
But she
a rabid
lives
cow sounds kind of oxymoronic. I was thinking more about
there. Yeah, it totally
monkeys.
does, doesn't it? It makes all these cartoons come to mind.
Monkeys.
Yeah, but that's a good one. But presumably it'll be in the saliva and the nervous tissue like it
Yeah,
is
yeah,
with
yeah,
other
yeah,
animals.
yeah.
We'll vaccinate cats as well. We just tend to talk more about dogs.
Oh, you do. And you do it the one village at a time, because if you do it well, then it can serve as an example to the next village.
Yeah, and we've already found that. So I've just done two villages up to now, and that was because I was, you know, limited by resources because I hadn't created the NGO then. But all the local veterinarians came in, the government vets, they were super supportive. And already there's a waiting list because people heard that we were vaccinating these dogs, and all the surrounding villages said, look, you know, we really want to be rabies free as well, of course. Yeah, it's understandable they don't want to get rabies.
Do you have a rabies jab when you go to Cambodia?
Yeah. And I don't get bitten very often, but if I do get bitten, I'll get another jab. But every time I come back to New Zealand, I have a antibody titer done. So that just is making sure that I've still got strong protection against rabies.
What I also want to talk about, so interesting as rabies, but I also want to talk about the giant African pouch rats.
Yes.
Which are used to detect landmines and other, presumably, other unexploded ordnance in Cambodia. Uh-huh. I've seen a picture of these. They are extraordinary.
Oh, they're incredible. They are so cool. They have a visitor's... Sorry, I keep on...
No. There's a little delay on the line. It's my fault, Trish. So your practice served the project which used these pouched rats to detect the landmines.
Yes, and I've been to the their headquarters in Tanzania and seen, oh, it's so cool, the little... First of all, I should say to the people that are listening who hate rats, I've had so many people come to Cambodia and I've said, no, you've got to go to the visitor centre, you have to see these rats working. And they really are phenomenal. They're huge. They're called pouch rats because they've got big pouches and they poke a banana in each side, little Asian banana in each side of their mouth. They're just amazing, but super clever. So going to the headquarters, I was able to see them from, you know, birth, all the training. So it was all started by Bart, who had a real passion for rats when he was growing up. And then he came up with the idea of using them to find landmines, which they do through smelling them, scent. And so they, they're bred and trained in Tanzania, and then they're sent out post-war, you know, once everything's settled down a little bit, and it's safe to send workers and rats out there. They send them out to various countries. They're very active in Cambodia at the moment because there's a lot of active landmines still. And then they get some more training on the ground there, and you know, then they're all good to go. But none of them get blown up because they're super, super light. And what they do is, it's so cute, when they find an explosive, they scratch at the ground. And some of them turn around in circles and, you know, and then that's how they do it.
What on earth's that noise I can hear?
It's a plane.
Oh, thank heavens. I mean, I immediately think it's an earthquake of some description. These rats are not like rats. They're like large dogs or something, and they are very clever, but they can also, I read, detect tuberculosis by scent.
And super fast.
How would they do that?
What they do is they get people to spit in little pottles, and they have them sort of in a... It's not even a cage. It's sort of in a unit where the little pottles have got places where they sit in the floor. So they're sort of below floor level, but the rats can smell the top. And the rats just run backwards and forwards, like full speed, and then they'll just slam on the brakes when they find a sample with TB.
Have you seen that? Have you seen it?
Yeah. I saw it when I was in Tanzania. They showed me. But I was just blown away at how fast they are. And they're very effective as well. You know, they're accurate. And the same with landmines, super accurate.
Where are they native to, the rats?
Tanzania.
Oh, are they native there?
Yeah. Wow. And to make sure that the gene pool is still strong. I love the ethical perspective of this as well, is that they actually capture wild rats and then they breed from them twice and then re-release them. And when I was there, I said, you know, doesn't it really, really stress them out, like being really wild and then they're suddenly brought into, you know, cages, breeding cages inside. And they said, well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? But they just love the life. You know, they lie around, they sleep, they get loads of food. I think they just think they've gone to heaven, a living heaven.
Good Lord. We haven't got time to go into the Cows for Cambodia project, but I know that that's been founded by the Australian radio host Andrew Costello. And it involves a cow bank where people can get a calf and increase their prosperity by considerable amounts, because obviously their poverty levels are quite high. Are you involved in that?
Yes. I met Cozzy right at the beginning of his project when he was thinking about getting 8 cows. That was before I moved to Siem Reap. And now he's got over 1,000 amazing complex built. But the cool thing about it is that he handpicks the family. So it might be someone with no, you know, there were 2 boys with no parents and they gave them a cow. So they look after the cow and then the calf's born. And once the calf is weaned, they give the cow back. And when the cow is healthy and pregnant again, then they give them to another family. So ingenious. The family has to sign a lease saying, I'll look after it, I'll take it for vet care. My main role is I talk to the tourists, 2 or 3 times a year, and I'll go and pregnancy test, you know, at the same time. So I usually pregnancy test 80 or 90 cows and maybe 3 or 4 buffalo.
What a fascinating life you have. And what, in 20 seconds, what are the chances of you going back there in the next 6 months, do you reckon?
Maybe the end of the year. Okay. But it depends on COVID.
Indeed. Very good to talk to you. Thank you, Trish Johansson.